Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. Last month, the Boston Globe reported an estimated 978 people died of opioid-related overdoses in Massachusetts in 2013. That's 46% more than the year before. Overdose fatalities were more than twice as common as those from car and truck accidents. The opiate epidemic in Massachusetts continues to escalate. Governor Charlie Baker recently unveiled the first part of his plan to tackle this crisis, which includes forming a 16-member opioid addiction working group tasked with the challenge to come up with a statewide strategy. The group will be led by Mary Lou Sutters, Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Attorney General Maura Healey. Tonight, we're joined by Governor Charlie Baker and Secretary Mary Lou Sutters. Welcome, Governor Baker, and welcome, Secretary Sutters.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for being on Right Turn Radio. Governor Baker, why is this issue important to you?
You know, it wasn't one of the things that I expected to be spending a lot of time talking to people about when I originally got into my campaign for governor. But I heard about it almost everywhere I went, and I heard about it. It didn't matter what part of Massachusetts it was in. I was in. It didn't matter what group of people I was talking to. This just came up over and over and over again, and I eventually, you know, concluded that this was an issue that was kind of a bit under the radar, and it didn't have quite the same visibility that some of the other larger issues in the race had. And that's why I talked about it in my shortly after the election, and I talked about it in my inaugural address. And rather than just sort of throw some policy ideas up against the wall, I made the decision to ask Mary Lou to chair a task force that would include a number of interested parties, affected parties, experts, to have them do some hearings around the Commonwealth and collect some perspectives and points of view from the people in Massachusetts, and then make a series of recommendations about things we could do administratively and things we could pursue through the legislature sometime in the month of May. And the group at this point has finished its public hearings. They had four of them, one in Greenfield, one in Worcester, one in Plymouth, and one in Boston. They were all attended by hundreds of people who came out to speak, and I managed to attend the entire Boston one and certainly got downloads from people who were involved in the others. And I found it to be incredibly informative and at the same time very poignant as people would discuss their personal experiences with this particular issue.
What about this issue made it feel urgent to you?
Well, certainly it was pretty clear to me that while the public conversation that was going on at sort of a high level was telling us one thing, I was hearing very different things from individuals I was talking to. And the thing that made it, and then, I went to the folks at the Department of Public Health and said, give me some data on this. You know, what are we seeing in the information? And the data basically said that the number of overdoses, not just overdoses, but fatal overdoses associated with opiates, had basically doubled over the course of the past two or three years, and then it were around 1,000 in 2013, which made it almost three times the number of deaths associated with automobile accidents, which, you know, if you talk to most people in the general public, I think probably before we started having these public conversations on it, I'm not sure anybody would have known that we were talking about something that affected as many lives as this does.
What is the plan of action of the working group?
Well, the first thing was to literally just get out there and hear from the public, which I think has spoken and spoken quite loudly. The second was to come up with a set of recommendations about things we could do within the confines of what I would call existing statutory authority, and then figure out what we might be able to do with additional statutory authority, and to see what sort of themes or you know sort of common ideas came up out of these hearings and these public debates, and there were several.
So, Governor Baker, this is Abby. What kinds of things have people been telling you that kind of pushed it over the edge? Because we in the field have seen it escalating from our point of view forever, but not forever, for years. But what kinds of things kind of caught your attention?
Well, I think the biggest thing was just the fact that this was coming up sort of everywhere I went. I mean, it wasn't like one of those things where you only hear about it in one neighborhood or another. I was hearing about it, you know, all over the place.
And right, it's that everywhere.
That just spoke to me about the fact that, you know, while people may think this is an issue that only affects a small, you know, subset of the population in Mass, this really, you know, cut across
and Governor,
geography, class, income, race, name it.
Yep. And Governor, this is Mary Lou. Good evening, sir.
Hey, Mary Lou.
Hi. And don't you think, like, two of the other things I think that really captured folks' attention was the statistic that many people have quoted, that 2.5 times more people have died from opioids than car accidents. But then the other thing I think that really has moved the public in a different way than what folks in the addictions world has known for a long time is the connection of prescription drugs to heroin and that sort of direct link.
Right.
And that 80% of folks who are addicted to heroin, it started with a misuse or perhaps appropriate use of opioids, and it led to heroin. And I think that link is one of those things that while addictions experts have known for a long time, I think the general public has not been as aware of.
Well, I think our experience was that people who did opiates were them. I mean, there was a lot of them. They weren't us. And I think people are realizing that kind of it is everywhere. You know, I mean, people start by the prescriptions and then move on to heroin whenever, but pretty inevitably. So so you're doing all this. Who did you include and why did you include them? I mean, just in general, who did you want to have? Do you have family members you have on your working group?
Mary Lou, why don't you speak to that?
Sure. So the working group is composed of individuals with chronic pain, individuals who are in recovery.
Good.
Individuals who have lost a family member to addictions. Doctors, researchers, providers, the wonderful commissioner of public health, Monica Barral.
Yep.
Education folks, law enforcement, sheriffs, so folks that represent the geography and the richness that is Massachusetts.
I want to describe something.
And by the way, the one other thing I would just say, and you mentioned it earlier, is that we were thrilled when the Attorney General decided to participate and join us on this, which
yes.
I think really gave us an ability to sort of spread the message even further.
We've had Attorney General Healy on the show, and she spoke strongly about her commitment to working with you guys. You know, I just want to describe a scenario.
Throw one more thing in.
Sure, Governor.
Something Mary Lou said about the Substance Abuse Mental Health Administration's data on the number of people who end up on heroin or started on prescription meds. We wrote 250 million opioid prescriptions in this country last year. I mean, the growth in pain med prescribing has been astonishing over the course of the past decade or so. And in addition to that, there's some folks at Mass General who've done a bunch of research on this, and one of their more sort of enlightening and surprising findings, to me anyway, was that 2/3 of the people who get admitted to a hospital in Massachusetts receive an opioid prescription and leave with it. And, you know, somewhere between 12 and 15% of those folks are still on that prescription a year later.
That's quite a number.
You have to do that for very many years in a row.
Wow.
Before you are creating for yourself a whole set of sort of ancillary problems to the one you may have been dealing with when that person showed up at the hospital in the first place.
Well, I think that's the we've seen so many young athletes come through who had their like rotator cuff surgery, or you know, and they found opiates and really liked them and then get in more trouble. And you know, that's not who you picture when you picture, you know, your star baseball player in your high school isn't who you picture.
There's clearly an issue too of educating the physicians, because it to dispense Suboxone in Massachusetts, you need to take pretty extensive training.
You need a waiver.
And you need a waiver to dispense opiates. You need to go to medical school. There's really very little training in medical school about addiction, about how to spot med seekers.
And how to treat pain.
So, but Governor, I just wanted to talk to you and Secretary Sutters about the scenario that we often see. And it's on the ground level of addiction and treatment, and it happened Friday. I got a call from somebody who had just been released from a detox and wanted to go immediately into treatment. She had a 3-day detox, wanted to go immediately into treatment. She has health insurance through MassHealth, one of the good plans that are part of MassHealth, and she was quoted by any of the treatment centers that take her insurance that it's 2 weeks to get her into treatment. We know treatment on demand is something that you guys are talking about. Can you give us an idea of how we can increase the number of available beds for opiate addiction in the state, and what we can do to kind of encourage getting the word out to the public about making that happen?
I think that's you, Mary Lou.
Are you giving that one to me, Governor?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can follow up on it. I have my own thoughts. And it's interesting, you actually went in a slightly different direction than I thought you were going to go when the question began. So, Mary Lou, why don't you take a crack at that, and then I'll sort of come in after.
Okay. So we have heard throughout the Commonwealth around the inability to get treatment on demand. And I think some of the things you're going to see from the working group, I don't want to, since we haven't finished our work, I don't want to sort of suggest what the outcome is. But I think you're going to see us make some very specific recommendations around expanding beds. There's no question. And then really creating sort of what I would call, those, when someone leaves a more restrictive level of care, how we ensure better care coordination, better, you know, that I refer to as the warm handoff to the next level of care. Right. So I think you will see, as you know well, it is in those times of discharge and then waiting that we see sort of adverse things happen. Yeah. So I think some of our recommendations will be specific around those junctures and trying to make a better continuity of care for people. And particularly if you can't get the bed, you know, whatever the next level is, of what can we do in the interim to help somebody be as stable as possible till that next level is available.
Right. And I think one of the and longer treatment. I mean, the goal isn't to get someone not craving heroin. It's to get them better and dealing with some of the underneath things. But I guess my concern is with the commitment to not raising taxes and not raising fees, that it's just kind of it's a scary thing.
Yeah, how are we going to do this? How are we going to pay for this?
I guess I'd say a couple things about that. The first is, let's just talk a little bit about the MBTA. Everybody said that, you know, the MBTA's problem was they didn't have enough money. And so in 35 days, a working group that we put together to take a look at what was going on at the MBTA came back and said some pretty astonishing things. The first was, over the course of the past 5 years, a system that everybody agrees is underinvested in only spent half of the available capital money that was there to be spent on infrastructure. Second thing they said was that on average, not counting weekends and holidays, MBTA employees don't show up for work 57 days a year, and that some units is as high as 74, which is 15 weeks. The third interesting thing that they came up with was that the MBTA had actually been receiving from the Commonwealth for the past 6 years more than enough funding to cover the debt service associated with the Big Dig. Now, they didn't say that there is not a revenue issue at the MBTA, but they absolutely said that if you don't fix all this other stuff first, then simply raising revenue isn't really going to get you anywhere. And I think one of the things people always assume when it comes to a lot of government stuff is that if you're not willing to raise taxes, you're not willing to solve the problem. I just reject that notion out of hand. And I think one of the great lessons, at least from the hearings that I sat through, and the conversations I've had with people about everything around opiates, is if we don't come up with a more aggressive and more thoughtful approach to managing the preventive end of this and the education end of this, we simply won't solve the problem. And I certainly think there are things we can do and should do with respect to expanding our treatment capacity, and I'm fully expecting that the task force is going to recommend a series of initiatives on that, which is going to be a good thing.
Well, I mean, I think the important... Oh, sorry.
If we don't do something about the front door on this one, we're kind of kidding ourselves.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think we both agree on that part. The whole idea of, by the time people are in treatment, it's already a big problem. We've got to work on preventing it and getting people educated about, family members, everybody, about how people get in trouble with drugs, really, not just what they throw at kids in seventh grade.
And it's a complicated issue. We often look for an analog in how cigarettes have smoking has changed in the public discourse. It's become uncool. Numbers are way down. And it took so many different fronts of the battle against smoking. And it's like we're talking here like, hey, let's Governor Baker fix it for us. And we know that it's a complicated and kind of a socially difficult issue to discuss. Many times it's not politically expedient to deal with this stuff. Addicts are among the lowest rungs of the social ladder, and certainly because they don't often vote, they aren't seen as people, an important group. I just wonder, what do you think it is about addiction that keeps it from being on a lot of politicians' radars?
I would say a couple things. I would say the first thing is, in most people's mind, it's very hard to get focused on something that, as significant as it is still an issue that, how would I describe this, falls somewhat off the radar because people don't really like to talk about it, even the people who are involved in it.
Yeah. True.
And one of the other interesting things that came out of some of the work that Mary Lou's group either got presented or I read through one of the presentations that was done was that some astonishing percentage of the people who were addicted didn't think they needed treatment. Mary Lou...
It's about 90...
I think it was like 90%.
Yep, about 94% of
That's
people...
That's not surprising to us
...of people diagnosed with a substance abuse disorder did not see a need for treatment in the beginning. And one of the things, one of the changes I think that needs to happen is for acceptance in the medical community that the... across the medical community, is that the treatment of addictions is the treatment of relapse. And it is, and addiction specialists know that,
right?
But I'd say the general medical community does not.
When I was at a SAMHSA conference a bunch of years ago, there was, it was just happened to be in like USA Today or something. It was comparing the, how, compliant addicts were in their recovery, comparing it to people with heart problems and people with diabetes, and they're much more compliant. And I guess what I would love to see is this actually being treated like an illness instead of a social problem.
I would say that with the governor, I would say that the stigma of addictions and not seeing it as an illness and seeing it as a social problem is one of the, I think, main thrusts that will come out of this, of our working group. It is stigmatized as mental illnesses, if not more so.
Yeah.
Sorry, Governor, we cut you off there.
I also think it's more complicated in some respects than some other things. I mean, I got plenty of friends who are diabetics. I got plenty of friends who have high blood pressure. I got plenty of friends who are managing all sorts of things, including friends who are graduates of AA and other addiction programs. And in some ways, I think the path to managing over the long haul addiction is ever complicated, maybe more so as the path is to managing some of these other things, which just, you know, based on my own observation, it seems a lot harder to manage for the long term an addiction than it is to manage, high blood pressure. High blood pressure, you just got to make sure you absolutely stay on your and things will work out. But an addiction requires a very different level of discipline and in some respects, sort of support and commitment.
But if you relapse and you're, on your heart medication, you miss it for 3 days, you're not anywhere near the same trouble as people
And I think what does separate some of the behavioral health conditions and particularly addictions from some other medical conditions is folks often end up in the wrong door, which is the door through jails in the criminal justice system.
Yep.
And then they finally get some treatments.
Are we addressing, as part of this working group, are you addressing the law enforcement end of this epidemic?
I have been, as part of our working group efforts is I have visited now, I think I will have visited every jail by the time the working group has its report done, in part because the sheriffs are pretty proud of what they have put in place when they realize that 60, 70, almost 80% of their population, depending on where you are in the Commonwealth, has got there through some substance abuse issue. I do think that we will look at possibly some issues around sentencing reform and whatever. Again, we're going to do like the whole gamut and present it to the governor for things that we can do sort of short-term, medium-term, long-term, around prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery.
Governor Baker,
most of the sheriffs have basically said that they, I think almost to a person, it might vary a little bit from place to place, but they all have sort of developed a variety of programs that are built on this notion that if you can help people get clean and sober, you can solve a big piece of what got them into prison in the first place.
Yep.
And keep them out afterwards.
Right, you know, and
so
keep them out.
They can actually get back into a more productive and purposeful life.
If you had any message, Governor Baker, as we close out the half hour, that you could give to the people of Massachusetts about this, people that might not know a lot about substance abuse and treatment and recovery, what would you say to them?
I think the first thing I would say is that most of the stories I heard that led to heroin addiction started through a relatively innocent and perfectly legal pain med prescription. And I think one of the things we all need to understand about this is Mary Lou's earlier point about the fact that 4 out of 5 people who end up addicted to heroin started on pain meds. This is not limited to sort of people who are bad people or who did bad things. I mean, many of these folks ended up here literally, in some ways, almost through no fault of their own. I mean, they literally followed the path that they were told to follow based on, you know, a physician's advice and guidance. And I think we need to step up and recognize that this is very different than what it may appear to be to many people who haven't spent any time studying this.
Governor Baker, thank you so much for taking time out on a Sunday night
to talk to
Right Turn Radio about this. We'd love you to come to Right Turn and visit us and see what we're doing and see, you know, what other folks are doing on the ground level with this, because it's truly a profound epidemic that's we're seeing really is affecting our children and the entire community.
And that was a big part of why, frankly, it was the voices and the stories that I heard campaigning that got me here in the first place. And with all the things on Secretary Sutter's plate, it's been terrific from my point of view that she's been able to work this one as hard as she has with the group that we put together. And I'm looking forward to being able to work on what they come up with after they put their report out in May.
We really appreciate having her here as well. We're going to spend the next half hour grilling her.
That's right. You're off the hook.
Yeah, we thank you so much, Governor Baker. Thanks for your time. That's Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker calling into Right Turn Radio. We're joined in the studio by Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutters. We just spoke to Governor Charlie Baker, and who had raised some really great points. And I feel comfortable that this working group that you're part of, that you're heading with Attorney General Healey, is really taking a good look at the problem. Can you describe kind of the overall plan of attack that you are thinking about?
Sure. So, first of all, the governor assembled a working group, which is, in our minds, really different than commissions because we're time limited. We want to come up with some really specific recommendations that address education, intervention, treatment, and recovery. It was really important to us to listen to community because whatever you do in terms of public policy or regulations or laws, it's got to be based on the experiences and the voices of the folks who experience it. So that's why we did the four listening sessions. 1,100 people came out. As I always said, being a social worker, I would stay as long as anyone wanted to be heard. So they were some very long nights. And then we have a website, which I know you'll be giving the information to folks who aren't comfortable being public about what they want to tell us. So that's the structure of it. I think you're going to see some really specific, I'm a big believer in pragmatic recommendations. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some short-term short-term fixes. I don't really want to call them a fix, but some structural issues we want to really highlight, and then some longer-term solutions around treatment and the like.
Well, we were listening to a naysayer amongst our little group here saying, you know, why is this you know, it's not affecting my family. It's not affecting me. I'm not speaking for myself. Why should I care?
Well, this issue, the issue of addictions, similar to issues of HIV and cigarettes, is a public health. This is a public health issue. It's a public health, actually, epidemic from my perspective. And so government has a really important role to define it, to confine it. And to really address it in a multi-pronged way, and to bring in other players, so commercial insurers, schools, criminal justice, and the like. But government has the ability to do that, and to use our bully pulpit and our regulatory roles to really bring others to the table. But this is a public health crisis.
Well, coming into this working group, and I know you're a social worker. What was the most surprising and alarming aspects of what you found out going to these hearings and whatnot?
The heartbreak of parents who lost, their child who became addicted to Percocet, oxycodone, whatever, and then became a heroin addict and lost them to an overdose in their 20s, 30s, and the like. And there was this, there's many themes, but one of the themes we heard was my child, the athlete, injury, prescribed opioids, unbeknownst to the parent, becomes addicted, and then, you know, fast forward, heroin. Never thought my child would become addicted to heroin, and then tracing it back to opioids. So, and we heard it everywhere. And now that's just one theme. So I think we will absolutely address education, targeted education in schools, and public awareness for parents.
Well, it's interesting because that's the problem, is that it's until it becomes us, nobody wants to deal with it. I mean, I remember one of the shows, somebody said, well, you should just circle your wagons and get yourself better. But it's like, but the other piece is it's a huge financial burden on on health insurance, on everything. I mean, and you were talking about how, you know, if someone, you know, it's so much more expensive to have someone relapse 33 times than get long-term treatment.
But what we need to recognize, and I think the stigma is so profound, that addictions are illnesses. They're not a social problem. It's not because I'm a weak character. It is an illness. And I think there are still so many people who believe it's a character flaw. If they just stop. And of which, of course, abstinence is a part of recovery, but it's an illness. Just like mental illnesses are illnesses. These are not character flaws. And I think we're going to push pretty hard on public awareness around addictions, that it can impact everyone. Everyone's family, my child, your child, my husband, your husband, everyone in your family. And the cost of not and putting our head in the sand is just not acceptable in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
We're talking about the opiate epidemic in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're talking to Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutters. She's in the studio with us. We'll be back right after the break. In the studio with us is Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutters. She has been appointed by Governor Charlie Baker, along with Maura Healey, Attorney General of Massachusetts, to head a 16-person working group to address the epidemic. And we're talking to her about the work she's doing. And Abby, you have a question for Secretary Sutters.
Thank you, John.
I love passing it off.
Well, one of the things you were talking about was about the different kinds of prevention. And what you were talking about is primary prevention, the information we have to get out there. So what kind of things are you, you know, these aren't the recommendations, but what kinds of things are you thinking about?
So the themes that I think clearly the working group is going to have some recommendations on is around what I'd call public awareness and education. And when I talk about education, it's education in schools for kids down to pretty young ages. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's middle school or elementary school, I'm not sure, but certainly really talking to kids early in age-appropriate ways about addictions. And not waiting until they're 16, 17 years old and they go to some party and there's a bowl of Percocets in the room and let's pick our favorite color and what is this? But really making it, as I think one of you said earlier, making it not cool to be part of that. Let's do a drug party. Right. And you've got to target kids earlier.
Yeah, we actually see a lot of people who their first time they used was 12, 10.
I think another theme around that is many of the schools have required programs for parents before their kid starts in sports programs and in athletics. And so, you know, it's always usually focused around concussions and things. Well, why wouldn't we add to that, since it's required, about if your kid is hurt and they're prescribed certain medications, be very attentive to that. It's a little bit more intervention rather than primary prevention.
That's great.
But, right, it's like it exists. Let's add to it. Let's add to the curriculum around to manage kids. We heard a lot about from folks. I remember one listening session in particular where a whole bunch of people got up and said, you know, we make it illegal for kids to have alcohol. So why is it legal for kids to be prescribed opioids? And, you know, I don't know where we're going to go with that, but it was one of those times where you sort of, I remember like really sitting up and like it just sort of stayed with me, right? Mm-hmm. So I think like public awareness in general, we know how effective public awareness, public health campaigns can be to the general public to like bring up what you know so well, but that everyone would get to know more about, but then really targeted education to kids and parents. And if I were a parent and was worried, places like Learn to Cope, there's lots of information out there, but these are like family to family kinds of, I'm such a believer in peer support, family mm-hmm. support kinds of models. And we've been actually adding funding to Learn to Cope programs. And if I were a family member and was worried, I'd either go to my doctor. I would probably go to like a place where there are families who are already struggling with family members with addictions. So that's, I think that's some of the stuff around education that we're going to probably come out with recommendations. You notice I don't want to say those are the recommendations
right.
yet.
Yeah, we understand the reports being released in late May.
Late May, early. We didn't actually give the governor a specific timeline. And unlike the T report, which was done 53 days or 35 days, whatever the number is, I have pointed out to him they didn't do listening sessions around the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Well, that would have been fun. I'm wondering, now you're talking about education in the school and prevention in the school system. I'm wondering, you know, once you start talking to physicians, once you start talking to health insurance companies, of course you're going to face powerful lobbyists and people who say, yeah, we're totally behind you. We'll do anything to support you in your fight for this,
but
except we will not change this. Because so you're going to face that. I'm just wondering with, you know, the medical community, are there any ideas, you don't have to tell us what they are, but are there any ideas brewing in a way, the talk about, you know, you hear people come out after having a wisdom tooth taken out with 30 Percocets or whatever, you know, Vicodin, whatever
refills.
It is. And three refills. What can we do? What are you thinking about doing?
So obviously education of kids and families, big part. You got to attend to where the drugs come from, which are doctors, not solely doctors, but prescribers. And we were very encouraged at the last opioid working group when the Mass Medical Society came. And we invite lots of people to come and talk to us in addition to listening to the public. And they recognize that they have a lot to do around educating their community around prescription drugs. And they said it in public. We're going to certainly hold them to it. But, you know, we need to work collaboratively with prescribers about changing their practices. And we need to enhance our prescription monitoring program in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We've heard a lot about it's clunky. It's not it works, but it's not as user friendly as it needs to be. And I think you'll see us make some specific recommendations, and that is under my authority as Secretary of Health and Human Services, around making the prescription drug monitoring program more available and more user-friendly for prescribers. So I think those are some of the things.
That's great.
That's wonderful. We're excited about that. We're very honored to have had you come by Right Turn Radio and
especially
talk about
this. Especially because she's another social
worker. We love social workers. We love getting awards from their association. Mary Lou Sutter's Secretary of Health and Human Services, thank you so much for taking time today on this important issue.
Thank you for having me, and I hope this is my first and not my last visit with
you're
you.
You're welcome
oh,
back
definitely.
Anytime. Actually, next week it's going to be a three-person host, and you're going
right.
to be a
host. She's our new host.
Hope you have Sunday nights open. speaking of which, next Sunday we've got a great program. I also want to mention that we are up for another National Association of Social Workers Media Award. You can go to their website and vote for us there. I also wanted to mention the opioid working group suggestions can go to www.addictionworkgroup@state.ma.us. You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.